Hi, I'm Chris Bedford, Dorothy Wagner Wallace, Director of the Baltimore Museum of Art, and welcome to Art Matters, a monthly feature where we provide insights into the work of some of today's most creative artists from Baltimore and beyond. Joining me today is Paul Rucker, a multimedia visual artist, composer, and musician who often explores contemporary human rights issues through his richly layered works in all media. So, Paul, welcome and thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So we have a lot to talk about. I'm going to begin with Rewind, which was a project that you undertook in Baltimore in 2015, and it straddled Creative Alliance and also the Baltimore Museum of Art. So I was hoping you could reflect on that experience and maybe tell our listeners how it catapulted you into the future.
My approach to making art is really to think about what things I wanted to address, and I wanted to address the normalization of systemic and structural racism and also talk about the Klan as a force, which is still a significant force. And this was done before Charlottesville, so people later thought that my piece was a response to Charlottesville. But it was really to learn about this culture of growing up in the South and the impact of the Klan and the long-lasting impact of the Klan.
I think it's instructive that you began the answer to my question by citing institutionalized structural racism. So I'm sitting here looking at a gift that you gave me upon entering the studio, and it's two containers of Harmony Food Source, designed and presumably composed by you. And on each container there is some information that the consumer, literal consumer, would enjoy or not. On this one, it says, did you know that mass incarceration costs the United States $182 billion a year? And on this one, it says, did you know that jails let phone companies charge what they want, sometimes over $20 for a single 15-minute phone call? So both illuminating facts which you can embellish on, but what's the impetus behind this project? What are you doing with Harmony Food Source?
I realized that making art is a wonderful thing, but I wanted to do something that was going to create possibilities. So the labels for this food sauce is designed by people who are formerly incarcerated. The website is designed by people who are formerly incarcerated. I want to have 99% of the people that are working on this project from production to distribution to be formerly incarcerated. We must do something about reducing recidivism. Recidivism is the rate of return to prison, which is around 77% right now. So I want to figure out ways to empower people so they can be self-sustaining, having a job and being able to support themselves with food. And finding a job is difficult enough, but if you have a criminal record or if you've been formerly incarcerated, it's even much more difficult.
So I had an interesting conversation with Mark Bradford recently, and we were talking about exactly this issue and artist intervention into social questions. And listening to you talk, I think about Theaster Gates and I think about Mark. And Mark's provocation to me, unvarnished, was, well, how is it that no white artists are doing this? Why is it the black artists are doing this? So what's your answer to that question?
The disproportionality of incarceration. I mean, even in this city here, you have a 63% black population, but we're disproportionately represented in prisons. And if you look at the nationwide population of 12% black and prison system being 40%, I mean, there's a disproportionality there. And there's also a disparity in wealth. I mean, there's a lot about the prison system, but it's also about wealth as well. A study recently came out a few years ago that said by the year 2020, white wealth will be 86 times more than black wealth and 76 times more than Latino wealth. And that also translates into what kind of representation you get that could keep you from going to prison.
So how do... And I believe this is a possibility and a mandate, and I think it's the responsibility of museums to give artists this platform to say these things. But how does art uniquely intervene in that conversation in the way that politics and politicians don't or can't?
I think art and artists are ahead of the curve. I think with Nick Lowe, as we mentioned Theaster and mentioned Mark Bradford, I think Nick Lowe also needs to be mentioned as well as artists that see a need and they act on it a lot earlier than other folks. I think the role of the artist, and I'm digressing a little bit, is to make the unseen seen and to promote empathy and understanding with their work. And I think that's what great art can do.
So I completely agree. And for me, it involves a person who is willing to imagine the unimaginable, who is willing to go beyond what's possible and conjure something that would be a remedy, but is perhaps not practical, as a provocation to others. Is that what you think artists should be doing right now?
definitely embracing the ridiculous, more risk takers. We have to take more risks because for me right now, I think for a lot of people, we're in a state of emergency. We've normalized atrocities to the level that we're used to seeing homeless people. We're used to seeing people die of opioids. I mean, if you look at today, we have one opioid death every 8 minutes. That's 200 opioid deaths a day. How can we as a society normalize that type of death?
And you feel that artists are uniquely positioned to counter that normalization, to call attention to it and force people into action.
I think artists are, but I also have to caution, it's really important to make artwork, but it's also important to influence policy. I created this piece, Proliferation, which is an animated map, which was seen at the BMA as part of Rewind. That video was made in 2009. I created this video because no one would fund me to address prison issues. Now, a lot of people are addressing prison issues, but that video has been used to address prison-based gerrymandering. It's actually been used to influence policy. So I think artists have to move beyond selling art. We have to move towards also affecting policy and change and changing minds as well.
Pivoting back towards your work as an artist for a second, you recently were engaged in a residency program at Virginia Commonwealth University. Could you tell listeners a little bit about what you did there and how that's being carried into the future?
Virginia Commonwealth University has this program called iCubed, and part of the program is to address the lack of diversity. And similar to Baltimore, Richmond is a majority black community, but you can go to businesses and workplaces and you'll see all white staff. Places like museums, ballet, opera, symphony orchestras have been major bastions of white supremacy, and there's been a disparity in who gets those jobs. And that's, again, part of the system, systemic and structural racism. And so through a really competitive process, they picked three arts fellows, and I was one of three arts fellows, and I was embedded in the Institute for Contemporary Art, a new contemporary art museum, 40,000 square feet, $41 million. It's an amazing building, and I was part of the first show there called Declaration, where I showed the largest collection of Klan robes, of 52 Klan robes, in this piece called Shelter in the Time of Storm. And there were a lot of artifacts around the origin, history, and organization of the Klan. So it was a big collection of that work. And it was recently purchased by the Virginia Museum of Fine Art. And it was really appropriate that it happened in the capital of the Confederacy. Well, it was only the capital for 4 years, but it was a significant place for this piece to be shown. And I must say that Baltimore and Richmond have so many parallels as far as history goes and significant things that happen within history, whether it be here in the Inner Harbor and the slave market here, and a lot of the positive and not so positive aspects of history around slavery as well, because, you know, Maryland kept slavery going on for another 2 years later. And I think they're both magical places as well, because there's a lot of people that are really trying things. But back to Virginia Commonwealth University, they've hired me as assistant professor there, and I'm embedded in the museum. It's a very unusual position to have, and I'm working on some new shows right now for the future and working on some programming. I'm writing a book that to help artists deal with the psychological aspects of being an artist, like poor artist mentality, imposter syndrome. I have about 20 chapters really dealing with the deep psychological aspects of being artists, like self-doubt, and also thinking of strategic planning and moving beyond your own personal perceived limitations and other people's limitations as well.
So, in closing, what are you most excited about that's coming next for you?
I'm going to TED in Edinburgh, and then before that I'm going to Liverpool, and then I'm going to Ghana. I think this is a 400-year return. You know, the first Africans were brought here 400 years ago, so I've never been to Africa. I've never really called myself African-American. I'm just an American who's black. But I think going to Liverpool and Edinburgh, Liverpool is the international slave capital of the world. More than 5,000 slave voyages left from there. So going to Liverpool and then a couple of months later going to Ghana is going to be the thing that I'm most excited about right now.
Paul, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
You can learn more about Paul Rucker's work at rewindexhibition.com. Thank you for listening today. Art Matters is produced for WYPR by the Baltimore Museum of Art. And for the Baltimore Museum of Art, I'm Chris Bedford.